Welcome to the English Eden podcast. This is your host, Tyler Hawk. I apologize for any echo that may be in the recording today. This episode had to be put together a little hastily. Hopefully the next one will be recorded under some better conditions. Now today, two things that I want to focus on. In teaching English, there's two important concepts, and they're represented in some standards that I have to teach. The first being reading literature number 9, which talks about analyzing how an author draws on and transforms source material in their work, mostly in reference to authors like Shakespeare. And the other is reading literature 5, which is analyzing how an author's choices concerning structure of a text impact the meaning. Those are the two focuses for our episode today. So we'll get a little introduction to the publication of Romeo and Juliet, and then we're going to talk about some structure along with the historical implications. So for some background information real quickly, Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet play was published in 1595. Now Shakespeare's primary source is usually attributed to being a poem that was written by Arthur Brooke in 1562 called The Tragical History of Romeus and Juliet. He could have also known the popular tale of Romeo and Juliet from a collection by William Painter called The Palace of Pleasure, which was written around 1580. So not very long before he was publishing his work, he definitely would have been aware of these works. The sources for those two works were a novella called Giulietta e Romeo by Matteo Bendeo in 1554, and then also a story newly found of two noble lovers written by Luigi da Porto in 1530. So long history. One thing that Shakespeare is known for is not being super creative with his own works, but he's really, really good at taking works that have already been established and been made popular and making them much, much better through his writing. I'll put the source material for that historical information on the show notes if you want to see where I got all of that from. Now, to transition real quickly to the structure of the text, I found a great book in my library called Shakespeare, Modern Essays and Criticism, edited by Leonard F. Dean. And in there, I found an article that was written by Carolyn Spurgeon called The Imagery of Romeo and Juliet. This article was written in 1930, so it's not quite in the public domain, so I'll make sure to put my source material and I'll only quote sections of it rather than reading the whole thing. But it has some interesting information that I think we need to have before diving into the text to help us pick out some of these structure issues that Shakespeare is putting into his text. So in here, Carolyn is talking about images that recur throughout many of Shakespeare's plays. One of the big things that occurs in King Lear and in Macbeth is this idea of lightness and darkness. But Carolyn in here points out that lightness is much more important to Romeo and Juliet for meaning than it is in those other plays. She says, in Romeo and Juliet, the beauty and ardor of young love is seen by Shakespeare as the irradiating glory of sunlight and starlight in a dark world. The dominating image is light, every form and manifestation of it, the sun, moon, stars, fire, lightning, the flash of gunpowder and the reflected light of beauty and of love, while by contrast we have night, darkness, clouds, rain, mist, and smoke. Each of the lovers thinks of the other as light. Romeo's overpowering impression when he first catches sight of Juliet on the fateful evening of the Capulet's ball is seen in his exclamation, "Oh, she doth teach the torches to burn bright," end quote. So in there, that's the first of many comparisons of these lovers to light and their love in general. And it repeats many, many times throughout the text and usually used in hyperbole or hyperbolic expressions of their love to each other. Carolyn goes on to say, quote, "Thus Romeo plays with the old conceit that two of the fairest stars in heaven, having some business on earth, have entreated Juliet's eyes to take their place till they return. And he conjectures, what if her eyes were there, they in her head? If so, the brightness of her cheek would shame those stars, as daylight doth a lamp." So again, very full of hyperbole here, and that comparison to the brightness in her cheeks being like that, it reminds me of the Shakespeare sonnet, I believe it's sonnet 18, where he says, "Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate," right? We use all that description like that, that's full of hyperbole. Carolyn goes on to say, "Love is described by Romeo before he knows really what it is." So he is only 17 in this story. Juliet is 13, and that is going to be an issue. There is going to be a theme as we're reading of old and young and how rash both can be and how when they mix, that can be a bit of an issue. I know 17 shouldn't be considered old, but that age gap is important, and it definitely was an oddity for Shakespeare's time. There normally wasn't really 13-year-olds getting married off left and right. It was not a cultural norm at that time. Carolyn goes on to say, "The irradiating quality of the beauty of love is noticed by both lovers." She says, "There can be no question, I think, that Shakespeare saw the story in its swift and tragic beauty as an almost blinding flash of light, suddenly ignited and as swiftly quenched. He quite deliberately compresses the action from over 9 months to the almost incredibly short period of 5 days." So a typical Shakespeare play is supposed to take between 2 to 4 hours to perform. The events that happen throughout this play take place over 5 days. Them not knowing each other, to meeting each other at the ball, to falling in love, to getting married, to their tragic demise, all that takes place in 5 days. And the light coincides with that idea quite a bit. Okay. Carolyn goes on to say, as the play goes on, light continues to represent their love, and darkness starts to counteract that and work as a foil. There's a quote from the play that says, "More light and light, more dark and dark are woes." So the more that their love takes hold of them and causes them to do irrational things, the more that darkness starts descending on them and causing this tragedy to really take place. Carolyn says, quote, "And then at the end, we see the darkness of the churchyard, lit by the glittering torch of Paris, quickly quenched. Romeo's arrival with his torch, the swift fight and death, the dark vault, which is not a grave, but a lantern irradiated by Juliet's beauty. Romeo's grim jest on the lightning before death, followed immediately by the self-slaughter of the star-crossed lovers. The gathering together of the stricken mourners as the day breaks, and the glooming peace of the overcast morning, when the sun for sorrow will not show his head." So that's just showing more how the lightness changes to dark. Even at the end, Juliet is still exuding lightness, but it's not enough to counteract the darkness that's overtaking the entire play. Carolyn keeps going on. She says, quote, "He took the idea from the last place we should suspect," referencing Shakespeare. So Shakespeare, like I told you, he took from that tragical history of Romeo and Juliet, written by Arthur Brooke. He took from that. She describes it as a wooden doggerel of Arthur Brooke, and the germ of it is in the sing-song line in which Brooke describes the attitudes of the lovers. Quote, "For each of them to other is as to the world the sun." So we saw that description of her, of Juliet's cheeks being brighter than the sun, it would outshine everything just like the sun does a lamp, right? And she says, "Other suggestions also come from Brooke, such as the emphasis on the bright light of the torches at the ball and Romeo's first sight of Juliet, which he describes as a sudden kindled fire. Her first impression of him, when he in her sight did seem to pass the rest as far as Phoebus's shining beams do pass the brightness of a star." So that sudden kindled fire and the Phoebus reference, or that allusion to that Greek god of light or the sun, both of those are written by Arthur Brooke in his poem. Carolyn ends her analysis of the play by saying, quote, he has transformed a few conventional and obvious similes of little poetic worth, which is a pretty rude thing to say about Arthur Brooke, into a continuous and consistent running image of exquisite beauty, building up a definite picture and atmosphere of brilliance, swiftly quenched, which powerfully affects the imagination of the reader. So as you go on to read Romeo and Juliet, or if you're going to listen to the recordings that I make of the play and of the No Fear Shakespeare version for you to listen to if you'd like, keep in the back of your mind the ideas of lightness and darkness. See how many times they pop up and what kind of influence that has on the meaning of the play, because there really is a continuing symbolic meaning behind that motif of lightness and dark. Another thing to keep in mind might be the image of blood and the poison that occurs in the play. Both of those have a pretty symbolic meaning behind them as well, which we will discuss in an analysis after I do the recordings of the play. Thank you for listening to this short little introduction and analysis of an important element of the play. I hope you enjoy my readings of Romeo and Juliet to come shortly. Goodbye.